You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey there, everybody. It's Leslie Marshall again. If you were with me yesterday, thank you for rejoining us today. I'm sitting in for Tom on the Tom Hartman Program, and we have a lot to talk about in the next 3 hours. I hope you'll be joining us. We have guests, and anything goes Friday, I'm told by the crew here, so I hope that you'll weigh in with your opinions on issues I'm putting out there, but things you're thinking about as well. 866-987-TOM is the number. More than a pleasure to have with us someone that I know or connected on Facebook. We chat there. He's been on my program as well, Mark Taylor Canfield. Mark is an independent journalist. He's based in Seattle. He is also a contributor for the Huffington Post and Truth Out. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Happy Friday. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Oh, don't tell me. I did it again, right? Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hey, Leslie, it's good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
I know. It is good to talk to you again. Well, speaking of again, I think we talked last year. It is May, another day in May, another May Day, and more protest in Seattle. Tell us from your perspective, being there in Seattle in the Pacific Northwest, what people are, upset about, and it would seem there are two huge issues that I heard most of the chanting on today when I was checking everything out online and checking it out on TV and every other news source out there. Share with us your take.
Well, it was an interesting night, Leslie, because Tom Hartman was actually in town at Town Hall giving a presentation about his book. And I walked out and I got word while I was at Town Hall that something was happening on Capitol Hill. And sure enough, there was a big confrontation going on between police and protesters. The police were trying to clear the street at that point, so this was getting around 10:30 at night. By the time it was over, at least 9 arrests and pepper spray was used on the protesters again this year.
Again, yeah.
Which is becoming an annual confrontation, between protesters on May Day and the police, which started back in 2012 when there was actually damage to a federal courthouse, which ended up in a grand jury investigation and the jailing of a few activists who were placed on solitary confinement for refusing to cooperate. And then last year there was another confrontation where 18 were arrested. And once again, police used concussion grenades and pepper spray. And at least one reporter for our local TV station, KOMO, was hit in the face with pepper spray last year and was blinded for several minutes while she tried to make her way through the crowd. So there were complaints last year that the use of pepper spray was indiscriminate. And just to give folks a background on what's been going on in Seattle, the Seattle Police Department was under an 8-month Department of Justice Civil Rights Division review, and they found the practice and policy of the use of excessive force by the Seattle Police Department. So since then, there's been a virtual stalemate on instituting reforms at the department, and most of the civil rights groups that were involved in those discussions have walked away from the table, and the DOJ has had constant threats of lawsuits because of this unwillingness to reform the department. So people were keeping a very close eye on what was happening. Basically, this came to a head back in 2011 when a Native American woodcarver was fatally shot by Seattle police, and their family received a $1.5 million settlement. And then during the Occupy Wall Street protests, police were once again criticized when 85-year-old Thurley Rainey was pepper sprayed and Mayor Mike McGinn was forced to make a public apology. So people were really on edge yesterday, not knowing what was going to happen next. But it's become an annual confrontation, Leslie. It's like almost a tradition in Seattle now where later in the day, after the main May Day marches and protests happen, and by the way, there was a very large peaceful protest.
Well, I wanted to ask you that, Mark. Just hang on a sec. Sorry to interrupt, but I did want to ask you that, and you're coming into my question, so you're entering my mind. That was something that I noticed. This is a pattern, definitely, of behavior by the police. Is it a pattern of behavior by demonstrators or who join the demonstrators? And I say that because there were hundreds of people who were peacefully demonstrating, which is their constitutional First Amendment right to do, and adhering to that First Amendment, at least from everything I read, everything that I saw. When the day gets later and the sun goes down, that's when it seems the pepper spray is used. That's when it seems the arrests are made. Are the people that are joining the protest after the peaceful demonstrators, hundreds of them, have made their point, and as the sun sets. Mark, what is your take? Are there some people that really aren't a part of these organizations, some fringe elements out there, you know, maybe saying, you know, having a couple of beers and then joining and causing problems? Or are the police looking for things, and, you know, if you look hard enough, you'll find it?
Well, there are two points to that. One is that there was a report by former Los Angeles Police Deputy Chief Michael Hillman in 2013 that found that Seattle had a very unsuccessful crowd management policy. That it was highly critical of the Seattle Police Department for not having any new crowd control training since the riots during the WTO demonstrations in 1999. However, it is true that what happens is you have the main march, which is a workers' rights, immigrants' rights march that takes place every year. It's been going on for decades. Mm-hmm. And that is always peaceful and well-regulated and actually has applied for a permit from the city to have these marches. And our mayor, Ed Murray, and our city council member, Shama Sawant, spoke at that event. What happens is there are other independent groups who are not affiliated with the main traditional marches who decide to strike out against capitalism, which they seem to think is the problem in the world today. And so they decide to take the streets without a permit. And what I witnessed last night was, yes, they were allowed to take the street and were followed by police for about 3 hours. Then finally, the Seattle Police Department just made the call that we're going to clear the streets, we're going to open up traffic again, and that's when they use the pepper spray, and it's sort of indiscriminate. In other words, anybody who's on the street at that point is subject to both arrest and these crowd control measures. So what happens is they decide to clear the streets, and then at that point, the pepper spray flies, and anybody who happens to be in the way, if you're a reporter or a bystander, well, you get caught up in it too. So that's what I saw last night.
I saw various reports on how many were arrested. I saw 7, I saw 10, I saw 15, I saw 4. Do you have the number of how many were arrested this May Day?
According to the latest reports, and there is a pretty good article over at Huffington Post about this today, there's mm-hmm. 9 arrests.
Okay, I knew it had to lie somewhere in the middle. You know, you constantly are reading anarchist. Do you think these people are anarchists, or are they just Americans who are, you know, speaking out strongly for what they believe and they're protesting? Why are the May Day people speaking about immigration reform and minimum wage in Seattle anarchist, but, you know, when anybody else does? I mean, are Tea Party folks anarchist? I mean, when anybody has a disagreement with their government, why is it that this particular group on this particular day is categorized as such? And do you and the others in the Seattle area and with this group have a problem with that?
Well, there is a lot of dissension within the May Day groups about these tactics. And so it does cause controversy. This year, there was less talk of anarchists, and they were self-described as, quote, anti-capitalists. So what you have, basically, Leslie, is a bunch of young folks, students especially, who are very angry and are doing illegal acts to show their disapproval of a system that they think is full of economic and social inequities. So in some way, you could look at it as these are young, angry folks, the young Turks, so to speak, who have very little respect for authority, and so it creates an inevitable confrontation every year when they decide to take the streets without a permit and just march wherever they decide to go.
Yep.
And at some point, like I said, the crowd control.
Definitely crowd control, bad crowd management. You said Los Angeles said that. They know how to control it here in the city where I live. Mark, thank you for joining us. Mark Taylor Canfield. Follow him on Twitter at @mtaylorcanfield. I'm Leslie Marshall. More to come here on The Tom Hartman Show.
This is The Tom Hartman Program.
Coming up, 866-987-TOM is the number, and I, Leslie Marshall, will take your calls. We'll talk about the May Day protest, but we'll also talk about immigration reform and minimum wage. Hey, how you doing? I'm sitting in for Tom Hartman again. Glad to be here on the Tom Hartman program. I'm Leslie Marshall, and you just heard my interview with Mark and Saw here on Free Speech TV, and thank you for watching. With Mark Taylor Canfield, we talked about the May Day protest in Seattle. But the reason for the protest, and it starts, like he said, for decades, is immigration and immigration reform. I want to get your 2 cents on that. And also, speaking of cents, no pun intended, we're going to talk about minimum wage. We have a great guest coming up next hour. We'll continue that conversation. But it is a free-for-all Friday, so be sure to join us. 866-987-TOM. Let's start it out in Brownfield, Texas. Kevin is watching on Free Speech TV. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining me. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Leslie. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for filling in for Tom. First thing I wanted to ask about was TPP, the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, the negotiations are going on now, and apparently there's nothing being said about it on major news networks. And I was interested in any details you might have about that, plus the forced arbitration that certain companies like Amazon and eBay and General Mills are. You know, can you give me any information about that? You know, if you have a dispute or something with one of those companies, you have to go to their arbitrators and arbitrate it before you get to go to court. Can you tell me anything about that? Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. No problem. As far as TPP, my understanding is, and we did cover this on my show, and I'm just speaking like, you know, off the top of my head in my recollection of that conversation. Just so you know, I'm very pro-union. And when the unions have a problem with something, I'm usually in line with them, not because I have to be. Usually that's just where my mind falls because we have a very similar ideological mindset. There are problems with TPP, and TPP is the same problems we've had with every trade agreement, quite frankly, that the president has linked with the United States, and the problem comes down to, again, these are not alliances that are going to bring jobs back to the United States. That is a huge problem. Although we have, you know, good numbers that are coming out lately in the past few months with regard to labor and how many people are being hired, the decreasing of unemployment. We see states going out on their own and increasing, minimum wage and companies doing that, and certainly the president with the federal government. You have to have a job to go to. And there just have been so many jobs, so many factories shipped overseas. And this is a multifaceted problem. TPP does not close that loophole of a problem, if you will. Briefly, regarding arbitration, I know it from a different angle. My husband is a physician. And I am, as his wife, a partner in the medical practice that he and a group of doctors owned. But at one time, it was just us, mom and pop, little medical practice. And there are doctors, we did not have it. There are doctors that will force you, technically, to sign an arbitration agreement before they will see you because they don't want to go to court. It's standard practice for a lot of companies. I wasn't aware, quite frankly, that Amazon did that. It's completely legal, but you also have the right to refuse to sign it, and they have the right to refuse to do business with you as well. It's a cost measure. A lot of people want to do arbitration and mediation because it's cheaper. In divorce, I hear, it favors the guy. So guys, listen up, and ladies, beware. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. I hope you'll stick around. More to come. 866-987-TOM at Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. Feel like having a beer and dancing, don't you? It's Friday. Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall. Don't worry, I won't do it. I do follow my FCC regulations and guidelines, even if I don't like them. The Tom Hartman Program is what you're listening to. Tom is out today, and I am in. Once again, thank you for joining me or for rejoining me. It's a free-for-all Friday. We just talked about, with Mark Taylor Canfield, the May Day protest and demonstrations, and once again, it's seemingly excessive force by the police in Seattle. But anything goes here. It is Friday. Let's get to the calls. And remember, these protests center around immigration and minimum wage for the most part. And I know many of you have very strong opinions on both those issues, especially with an election, midterm election coming up around the corner in November. All right, let's get to it. And we'll go to Frank at listening on KABQ in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Frank. How are you? Good afternoon.
Right. You know, it's not why I called, but you hit on a sore issue of mine because I have been an activist and I have been arrested and gassed and pepper sprayed at protests, you know, over 10 years ago. But in the United States, law enforcement is all about easy targets. You know, so I'm guessing they're going to leave the Bundy Ranch insane racist traitors with guns alone, and they'll definitely come after people like us, you know, the concerned citizens who are just demanding ethics and responsibility and accountability. And one of the issues that Tom Hartman brought up, he was the only progressive talk show host who I heard bring this up, is, you know, they arrest these Occupy or activists. They pepper spray them. They arrest them. They put them on probation, stating that they can't associate with fellow activists, or you can't go to protests, or they'll violate your probation, and then they'll charge them with felonies so they can't vote. And I don't know any of the progressive radio stars that went and checked on all these Occupy people that were getting arrested, thrown in jail, and tortured while they were in jail, because most of these jail guards are sadists.
Well, Frank, to your point, and I'll be honest with you, you're right. I've never said that, but I will say that it is unconscionable that we had Occupy Wall Street members, even in Seattle, demonstrators exercising their First Amendment right, arrested, because we do have a man and militia members there in Nevada who have broken the law. We did talk about this yesterday. They're setting up checkpoints and requiring that people give identification when they don't work for any state or federal law enforcement authority. In addition to that, they're disturbing the peace. In addition to that, they're bringing weapons. What type of weapons? Are these weapons all legal? Do they have licenses? Of course, we don't even know, probably not a background check if they got them at gun shows, right? The list goes on. There is no question that, in my opinion, in many of Americans' opinions, and not just on the left, that Clive and Bundy and his militia have broken far more laws than any individual at such demonstrations or from Occupy Wall Street. Very, very good point, Frank. Thank you for bringing it up. Thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. Let's go next to Jason, listening on Sirius in Washington, D.C. Washington, I almost, hey. I almost named D.C. after you, Jason, and said Washington, J.C. Hi.
Hey, I wanted to talk about the fact that, you know, we had Earth Day pass and so forth, and I didn't hear enough claim out there that we need to stop these ethanol mandates, which are an environmental tragedy. You know, we grow an area the size of California in corn, of which one-third of that landmass is grown to put gas, or let's say ethanol, in our gas tanks. Now, you have to think of how much topsoil erosion, how much depletion of the aquifers and the water that are involved. And I remember a number of years ago, they cornered Al Gore at a green conference in Athens, Greece. And he basically admitted it had nothing to do with hard science. He basically says the reason I was for it was because I was running for office and I wanted votes.
Well, certainly there's a political element to this. And we know as of this month, the White House has not yet received the EPA's final rule on the ethanol mandates for 2014. On my show, I cannot remember the name of the guest, to be honest, because I do 15 hours of radio a week and television, et cetera. So forgive me, but I can check with my producer during the break and look it up. But we had an excellent guest regarding Earth Day, and it goes farther than ethanol. If you look back to the 70s, you had thousands and thousands of people that were so outraged about what was happening to our environment, to our climate. And this was way before climate change. And what happened? You had a Republican president, Nixon, who founded the EPA. Cut to the chase now, 2014, what type of, you know, Earth Day organization and protest are there? There's not enough outrage, whether it is ethanol, whether it is global warming and climate change, whether it is our dependency on foreign oil, whether it's what we're doing to the air we breathe and the water that we drink and what we're leaving this planet to be for our future generations. That's a huge problem. I mean, the fact that we have to look to the 70s for more progress when it comes to the environment. I agree with you 100%. And it angers me that people don't realize. I got to tell you something. I wasn't really like big into climate change and the environment. And over the past 2 years, without the inconvenient truth, over the past 2 years, simply from experts on my show and things that I had read online and things that I researched in debating people when I'm on television, because I am a liberal on Fox News Channel, when I would go through this information and I saw not just the inconvenient truth, but the truth, I couldn't understand why more people weren't outraged, because, you know, there are people that, quite frankly, have been hugging trees long before I was born. And in the 70s, for us to look back to that time in 2014, again, to have any kind of momentum on this issue is appalling.
The thing that scares me about this is the fact that all of our solutions that people propose never actually have to do with real change. I mean, we know that a meat-based diet creates more greenhouse gas than every form of transportation combined. But for years, you didn't hear Al Gore talking about, well, we need to become vegans, which would have a bigger effect, or maybe just switching over to meatless Mondays would have a bigger effect than all of these other things that we talk about. I mean,
and give the people making pasta a heck of a lot of money. Thank you for your call. I am out of time on that one. We're going to take a break. Be back right after this. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Join us, 866-987-TOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We're going to take your calls. I really want to get your take on immigration reform and minimum wage. That's what the protests in Seattle were about. Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. A lot of things we're talking about. There were protests once again, and peaceful protests at that, by hundreds of demonstrators in Seattle, another May Day. They're protesting about immigration. They're protesting about minimum wage. And we'll talk about minimum wage. You can now. We have a guest next hour. I'm going to go into that then. There was a point that was brought up by a caller that I want to stress, and I have some questions for you in this hour, and I hope you'll join me at 866-987-TOM. We're also putting these on Twitter if you follow there, at Leslie Marshall for me and at Tom Hartman for Tom, T-H-O-M, two N's on Hartman. Here's the deal. Cliven Bundy hasn't been arrested. His militia bodyguards have not been arrested. They're breaking the law. Yet police, with ease, have arrested protesters in Seattle in the past 24 hours. How many hundreds of Occupy Wall Street people throughout the country over the years have been arrested? How come the Cliven Bundys have not been arrested? How come the militia have not been arrested? How come Tea Party members aren't arrested when they're at their gathering? This is a problem, and I want your 2 cents or more on it, 866-987-TOM. Immigration. The GOP cannot refuse to look at the reality of the changing, literal changing face of the American voter. The demographic of the voting pool has changed. More than 10% of Latinos will be voting in the next presidential election if the stats bear out going forward, with the fastest growing segment of our population, the Hispanic population. What will it take for the GOP to come to the table? And do you think that immigration reform will ever be passed, or is this going to be something we have to keep protesting about, and the undocumented working community has to grow as it is a part of that Hispanic population? What will it take? And I think those are the two things I wanted to ask you, and we will get right to your calls, so let's do it. Let's start it out with Joe, listening in Chicago on WCPT. Hey, Joe, good afternoon.
Hi. A lot of topics, but I just wanted to bring up the point that the great job numbers today illustrate how hopelessly the Democrats have failed to take control of messaging, and that here's a good number of unemployment being down, and the GOP is predictably right there saying, oh, but all these people are now out of the job market, and that's horrible.
You know what? I agree with you 100%. And it's not just on jobs. I've always said that the Republicans are much louder with falsehoods than the Democrats with facts. You have a lot louder messaging of fiction. We saw it with the Affordable Care Act. We've seen it with almost every nation that we have been involved with. We've seen it with the president with regard to foreign affairs, and we've certainly seen it with the economy. Poll after poll shows now, as it has for years throughout this president's two terms, I mean, even though it's not complete, the second term, the economy is number one, regardless of your political ideology, if you subscribe to any political party. This is a time, you're absolutely right, where Democrats should be standing and screaming from the hilltops, look at these job numbers, screaming, look at unemployment, screaming, look at what this has done. But what do Republicans say? Well, it's leaving the young behind. You know, whenever there's job growth, they always take that glass and they turn it to the pessimist point of view and look at and show the American people the half empty. And the Democrats need to be louder and more strategic and stronger and more aggressive about showing, no, 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 it's half full. Here are the facts. Here is why, especially with an election coming up and especially with the economy being number one in Americans' minds and successful data regarding the economy that just came out today.
But the thing is, the Democrats should have been saying that the people are out of the job market because the ACA has let people quit because they now have health insurance.
I don't feel, you know, first of all, it's too early to really see the impact regarding employment with the Affordable Care Act. I see more creation of jobs. When I was in Washington, D.C. for the Families USA conference earlier this year, I can't tell you how many individuals I spoke to who 1 year, 2 years before had no job, and they had a job now because of the passage of the Affordable Care Act. Some of them had jobs because of the legislation and working toward getting the legislation passed. So I honestly have not seen that at all. And I am a small business owner. I own my own radio show, and my husband's a physician, as I mentioned, and he is a physician. To be honest with you, I'll be very frank with you. I am a Democrat who supports universal health care. I supported the Affordable Care Act. I didn't feel, and I still don't feel, it's gone far enough. The people who are penalized the most, and it's not about jobs, it's physicians. They have reduced the physician's income. And a lot of people might say, let me get my little violin out. But they have reduced, they've cut in work comp, Medicare, the private insurance industry, and that could trickle down to the patient if something isn't done about that. And I think there is room for something to be done about that. Anything else? Nope. I guess we've got somebody else next. Watching on Free Speech TV is Terry, and Terry is in Nevada. Hi, Terry. How you doing?
Yeah, it's pronounced perump. Sounds like there should be a rim shot right after it, right?
Yeah, you saw my hesitation with it, right?
Well, it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, Ms. Marshall. I have a couple of real quick questions.
Okay.
I am in a debate with two very wealthy friends of mine who have been business owners, and they are using the same old scare tactics that minimum wage is going to wreck the economy.
Okay.
Now, I have learned from Mr. Hartman over the years that actually the economy improves every time the minimum wage goes up.
Correct.
What I am lacking is the computer skills to find a website that proves that. Can you help me?
Oh, okay. You get it, like I'm going to have it off the top of my head. There are many. Hang on one second, because I'm looking up some of them right here. How about we do this so that I don't take all the time looking up? Would you be cool with me during the break getting that information for you so that you don't see me sitting here surfing the web and people who can't see me just have dead air? Would that be fair?
You know, that's totally fine. And here is one thing, though, you can use with dead air.
Mm-hmm.
I learned it. I was a disc jockey myself. Once you have dead air, let it go a little bit longer and then come on the mic and say you've just been listening to side one of the latest release from Marcel Marceau.
I can tell you one website that does have a lot of information regarding minimum wage and how it benefits the economy, and that's the Economic Policy Institute website. That is one right off the top of my head. I think they're EPI.com. Here we go. Economic Policy Institute, EPI.org. Okay? So why don't you try that, and I'll get you some more. Does that sound good and fair?
Thanks for your help, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, there's a lot of data that supports that. And we go next to – let's go to Steve listening on Sirius in Haymarket, Virginia. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I think the point that is being missed is that whenever you start talking about the minimum wage, what has happened is your economic policies have utterly and completely failed. And I say that because in 1973, I paid my people, usually guys who had like 70 IQs and couldn't read and write, I paid them $10 an hour. Mm. And you know why I did that?
Why?
In the construction industry in Washington, D.C., that was the least amount of money I could pay. The minimum wage is nothing more than a stopgap thing to, I don't know, prevent employment. And I don't understand why we keep bringing this back up again. Why don't, you know,
Wait a minute. You say prevent employment?
Exactly.
But wait. You just said that you paid them $10 an hour, and then you said you paid them the lowest wage that you could. So what you've done is just proven exactly what American corporations are doing. They are paying people the lowest amount of money they can and that they can get away with paying legally. Here is the big problem. What year did you say that you paid $10 an hour to those construction
workers?
What year did you say you paid $10 an hour to those construction workers?
73.
This is 2014. Do you think the cost of living has increased? Do you think taxes have gone up? Food has gone up. The price of food, mortgages.
Cost of living hasn't increased. It's the value of money has been destroyed.
Well, I won't disagree that our money's not worth the paper it's written on. There's no disagreement there. But the cost of living has, even though everybody hasn't received a COLA, cost of living adjustment increase in their paychecks necessarily, cost of living has absolutely gone up. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no question the cost of living has gone up. I see that in my personal life. I see that with the businesses. Electricity goes up. Gas prices at the pump go up. The mortgage goes up. Even though interest rates are zero, not everything is tied into interest. There is a reality here. There are companies like Walmart having food drives for their employees who they are paying minimum wage to because it's not enough for an individual to feed their family. Period. I think you actually proved the argument that is contrary to your own with what you said about the employee or employees that you employ. Let's go to Dan in Chicago listening. Oh, Dan, hang on. We got 5 seconds till break. Hang on, buddy. I will come to you. Don't go away. And you don't go away either. I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Leslie Marshall, coming back to you in a heartbeat here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be taking your calls. Don't go away. Better yet, join us. Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman. How you doing, TGIF? Thank you for joining me. Let's get to the calls, and thank you for watching on Free Speech TV. One person watching on Free Speech TV is Duke in Victorville, California, not far from where I'm sitting. Hi, Duke. How are you? Good afternoon.
Well, pretty good, Leslie. Say, I got a bone to pick with you and Tom.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is when you develop a rant and you go for it, I appreciate that.
Okay.
I've never covered the other side of the rant. Like, for instance, you're always talking about the minimum wage. Have you ever thought about talking about a maximum wage?
We do talk about maximum wage, and we talk about how those making the maximum in many instances, whether we're talking about Bush tax credits, whether we're talking about closing tax loopholes, whether we're talking about how the Republican Party likes to benefit the party of the rich, whether we're talking about income inequality, whether we're talking about a disparity of wages, whether we're talking about power and money of 1% or 2% or 1% controlling the other 99, absolutely do we talk about maximum wage.
And what is it?
What is the maximum wage? Well, it's interesting because in a free market society we don't have a glass ceiling, so there is no maximum wage, is there?
There should be. If you're going to talk about a minimum, you better talk about a maximum.
I think that's more semantics. I think that's more semantics. But honestly, I am more than happy to cap the Koch brothers' billions and reduce the amount of money they will use to buy politicians in order to have corporations run our government. So I'm totally with you. Let's have a maximum wage. All right. Let's have a maximum wage. Let's see who's up next. We go to, Len in Chicago watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Len.
Hi, Leslie. The reason I was calling is I just wanted to give you some information about May Day and immigration reform protest in Chicago yesterday.
Awesome. I would love to hear it. Thank you for sharing.
So as you know, Chicago is the birthplace of the May Day demonstrations. Mm-hmm. It also has the Haymarket monument. And the unions there in Chicago have given great support to the immigration reform. There was about 2,000 people at the Haymarket Monument and ready to march yesterday. Would have been more, but the weather was just terrible. So I just want to let you know the police were there, but there was no problem, no friction with the police. As a matter of fact, they provided an area so the Teamsters could park their big traveling van and use that as a podium because of the weather. So in Chicago, the unions are behind immigration reform. They helped sponsor the march, and it was a tremendous day.
It was, and I think it's awesome that it continues, and I thank you for that. I'm a history buff, love Chicago, lived there for 4 years, and I'm sorry I didn't mention that was the birthplace, because a lot of people do attribute it to Seattle, and I think they forget about Chi-Town being a huge part of that, obviously, as the founders and having the city where its inception was. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Speaking of, we're going to be coming up to a break, right? Did you guys just tell me that? Well, yep, we are. Here's that music. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Don't go away. More of your calls right after this. 866-987-TOM and on Free Speech TV. Thank you for watching. 866-745-2667. Back after this, immigration reform, minimum wage, maximum wage, and more. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome back. Sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Well, I didn't forget you, Dan. As promised, let's go to Dan in Chicago listening on WCPT. Thank you for holding, Dan. Sorry you would have had 5 seconds. That would not have been fair. Good afternoon.
Great. I appreciate that. Good afternoon. Just a couple things. You did mention about immigration reform and minimum wage.
Correct.
Minimum wage was never really – I'm in the staffing business, so I'm real in tune with this. And minimum wage was never really designed to support a family. That's kind of a hard thing to think about. I have to say,
I don't know that I would wholeheartedly agree with you there. The first minimum wage law was passed in 1938, and the dates are important if you think about the time in our nation's history. And what it did at the time, listen to this, folks, it guaranteed workers a quarter, 25 cents an hour. The height of minimum wage was really in the late 60s. The wage was high enough relative, and the reason for passage of the legislation, listen, quote, high enough relative to the cost of living to provide a secure income. And it's risen slowly. Right? $7.25 an hour. And by the way, for a full-time employee, that's just a little over $15,000 a year. Even for two people in a home making minimum wage, you're still below poverty level. It's 2014. We have a responsibility, don't we? Don't we have a responsibility? I mean, we're one of the richest nations in the world, and we have a huge problem with income inequality, a disparity in wages. This can help to offset that and to benefit our economy and benefit people, the American people and their families in the process. Why shouldn't minimum wage be set up to assist people to raise their family? Are we basically saying, you know, keep this as low as we can and force individuals to work two and three jobs? There's already complaints that there aren't enough parents home with their children. There's already complaints that there's not enough time being spent with children. We have an increased number of children dropping out of school, becoming more violent. Hello, school shootings. And I do believe a lot of that ties in, by the way. And you put a gun in their hand, hello, magic. But I don't understand how you feel that the minimum wage is not designed to help a family pay for the bills and for that family to be supported. I don't agree with you, and I don't think the history bears that to be true.
Well, because they're by their nature of the positions, they're beginning positions. They're starting positions, which is typically somebody that would be, let's say, young, just starting out, no family, et cetera.
Yeah, but see, one of the other things you're forgetting is that of the top 10 jobs that pay below $10.01 an hour, the majority of those employees are women, and they're not necessarily starting out. Many of them have chosen to raise their families and go back to work. And a problem is they don't have the education, they don't have the skills, they don't have the experience. And that not only weighs into a problem when you're looking at what they're being paid with minimum wage, it also becomes a problem because they're getting 70 cents on that same dollar a man is getting for the same job. And that really contributes to that number strongly. The number of women who are in these lower income positions, minimum wage positions, and there is a growing number of women who are raising children by themselves, sometimes because the man has left, sometimes because they choose that route.
Right. And in Illinois, it's 8.25 currently, and you're right. It has not kept up with inflation. There's no way. And it does need to be raised. But the problem is that if you, let's say you go up 50 cents an hour or a dollar an hour, that extra $120 an hour or $120, let's say, in a month,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's enough to keep up with the rising costs of what's going to have to be risen, food, everything. I mean, I'm not sure that it's really going to help the problem. And it is behind. There's no doubt about it.
Well, with climate change, food is going to increase. That's a reality until we address that issue. And nobody really is in Washington, even on the left. Even though the president does things and says things, I mean, there's just not enough being done, and there's not enough outcry from, I think, the constituencies nationwide. So yeah, food is going to rise. You know,
right.
gas prices are going to rise, and we have a reality. The reality is minimum wage is not kept up with inflation. And we have people out there making $2.13 an hour who work in the food, who are a waiter, who are a waitress, sometimes a home care aide, people who work for tips, for example. And
right.
I think I made that when I was in college waiting tables. It's 2014. It's unconscionable that in an advanced society such as ours, we don't have a bottom line that can cover the bottom line of an American family. I think you had one more point you wanted to make on another issue.
I'm still not sure that minimum wage jobs are designed to support a family. But okay.
But if those are the majority of jobs available after the economy and after the dive in the economy and the recession, that has to be addressed. And remember, the more people working, the more goods that are being produced, the more that we purchase. It's economics 101. It's supply and demand. It will help to further stimulate the economy.
Right. Well, the other side of that is that, and I go back and forth on President Obama in my own mind. I wouldn't call myself a Democrat or Republican, but he was pretty strongly promising, for lack of a better word, comprehensive immigration reform. And in his first administration, he did absolutely zero on that. And the other side of that is that his administration has deported somewhere around 10 times what the George Bush administration did. So it's a complicated issue.
Well, it is a very complicated issue, and some people say, well, the number of people entering the country has reduced, and it has as the economy has gone down. So why do we have deportations that are up? One, you have to look at the ratio of criminals being deported, and that's essential, because one of the arguments that the right and anti-Obama people make, and people who are against immigration reform, basically they have this idea, to deport them all, or like Mitt Romney said, to self-deport these individuals. Because they perceive that these people are a criminal element, and not just because they came into the country illegally. Hang on, I'll finish my thought on that so I won't be rude to you with a response. We'll take a break right after this. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't go away. If you want to join us, 866-987-TOM.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey there, how you doing? Good afternoon, happy Friday, welcome or welcome back. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman once again here on the Tom Hartman Program. I hope you enjoyed the past hour, and I hope you will stay with us for the next two. We are talking about a lot of essential issues, and one essential issue which regardless of the majority of the American people supporting is the lack of support by Republicans in both the Senate and certainly in the House with regard to raising minimum wage. And that's just, I think, a sad statement for America today, to ignore the will of the people, their constituents, and the people that they promised to create jobs for if elected. Joining us in this hour is national organizer for the 15 Now campaign. Check out their website, 15now.org, Jesse Lessinger. Jesse, thank you for joining us this afternoon. I appreciate you being with us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Leslie.
Thank you for being with us. First of all, this is not a surprise that the GOP would not support an increase of minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, correct?
No, it's not a surprise at all.
And secondly, $10.10 an hour from, you know, research that I've been doing, there's a great piece in the Huffington Post that talks about 10. What about 12? It seems that economically, and I'm not an economist, but economically, the higher the increase, the better the nation, the company, and every worker across the board from low to middle and upper income benefit, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 10 would be an improvement for thousands of working people, but it's not enough. It's not enough to pay the bills. It's not enough to pay the rent. And if we went to 12, or in fact, what we're advocating for is $15 an hour at a minimum. I mean, that's millions and millions of dollars in the hands of ordinary working people that are going to spend it immediately back and putting it back into the economy, giving our economy the boost that it needs in these times.
There was a caller last hour who said that a couple of callers. One said, we shouldn't have a minimum wage. We don't have a maximum wage. Another caller said that a minimum wage, why do we have to, that minimum wage jobs aren't meant to support families. But even two people making minimum wage can't really support a family and are still technically living below the poverty level, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I would be very much in favor of a maximum wage. But, you know, the idea that minimum wage jobs, they're not intended to support a family, I mean, that's based on the idea that there's opportunity for better jobs out there, that it's a, you know, it's the first step on a ladder to climb. And that, I think, is one of the great American myths, especially today. There is, we actually have, in advanced and industrial countries, the least social mobility of all, that there aren't the jobs out there that, and that minimum wage jobs, it's not what people say about teenagers, just trying to make some extra spending cash. I mean, the average age of minimum wage jobs in fast food is 28. And in fact, it's a higher proportion of women, and the average age for women in these jobs is 32. And these are adults that they need to pay rent, and many of them have families. And the other thing is they're producing tremendous amounts of wealth, record profits for these fast food companies. So it's not as if the money isn't there. It's not as if their work is not worth it. They need and deserve a living wage.
People have taken off on their own, whether it's in a city like Seattle with the Mayor Ed Murray, because Seattle's going to be raising its minimum wage to $15 an hour. And $15 an hour, by the way, is what people are asking for, whether it's in New York, in Chicago, Seattle, with these May Day protests. Seattle's going to be raising its minimum wage to $15 an hour over the coming years. It was a deal brokered by the Mayor Ed Murray and blessed by labor groups, business groups, which is amazing, because you really think of labor on the left usually in business, or big business on the right. But again, this is a benefit to all. I was looking at a lot of different studies, and it's just amazing. Even the Congressional Budget Office says that, because Republicans like to use CBO numbers, but they only take pieces out of context. If you raise the base, the minimum, which I think should be called a working wage, not a minimum wage, but if you raise that base, middle and upper levels also are raised. So everybody benefits, even the rich CEOs at the top. The CBO said that 16.5 million people in America would have higher incomes. We want to say we're better off now than we were 4 years ago. This is one way to achieve that end.
That's right. And in fact, that's the 15 million that the CBO cites would be with the 10 increase. If I
correct.
Recall.
Yes. Not even. That's what I'm saying. Not even with 15. Yeah.
If actually you went to something like 15, I mean, the people that would be directly and indirectly affected in terms of the families is something like 50 million Americans. And that's about how many Americans are living in poverty today, which is absolutely it's an embarrassment that the wealthiest country in the world has such high levels of inequality and poverty. And so that's why we're fighting to go much beyond $10, mm-hmm. but at the minimum we think we need 15. And you mentioned that.
Do you think you go for, you know, you shoot for the moon and you get the stars? If you ask for 15, maybe you'll get 12. You ask for 10, you know, they're saying no. And some people would say, well, if you can't get 10, how the heck are you going to get 15?
Right. I mean, I think that's the key thing, is that you have to push for as much as we think we can possibly win. Maybe we don't win at all, but you're never going to win 10 without going for more. And the people say it's the other way around, that we got to do it incrementally. I mean, we've been told this for years, for decades. We got to go slow. We got to go incrementally. We haven't gotten anything like that. We're just losing, working people are just losing their position, losing ground. And I think it's time to go bold. That's the huge lesson of Seattle, is that we can actually win if we make very bold demands, put a lot of pressure from below. What you mentioned about the Seattle Mayor Murray's proposal yesterday for a $15 an hour minimum wage is an excellent step forward. It's also got some problems in our view, in that it takes too long.
Because it's phased in over years.
It's phased in, particularly for the big businesses. Mm-hmm. 15 now took the position that small businesses should be allowed, we think, a 3-year phase in to adjust. Because small businesses, they do struggle. It is harder for them. They're squeezed. It's very hard to compete with the large businesses. The large businesses get all the tax breaks. Like here in Washington State, Boeing, for example, got an $8.7 billion tax break, the largest tax break in history. They're getting all the deals. They are making record profits, the McDonald's, the Starbucks, et cetera. And they need to they can pay 15 immediately. So, unfortunately, Murray's deal, you know, includes a 3-4 phase in for big business. And this is his recommendation to the city council. So we haven't quite won yet. And that's why we're really pushing for even more out of the city council. Because we think working people deserve more. But just the fact that we've gotten this far, just the fact that we even in a major city in the U.S. having a discussion about 15, and not just a discussion, but in fact, the mayor and, the whole political establishment working in some form towards raising the minimum wage towards 15. It's an incredible step forward and change, and I think that's really due to the powerful grassroots campaigning that we built on the ground.
Yeah, no, you guys have done an awesome job. Very quickly, we have less than a minute. Will the president spanking the Republicans and them not voting in favor of raising the minimum wage bring more people out to vote in November and actually benefit Democrats?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a little bit concerned. You know, of course, the Republicans, they reject this. The Democrats are putting it forward, but I'm not sure if they're really fighting for it. And now, why is it coming in an election year 2020?
Yeah, well, definitely it's political. But if you can ride the political wave and benefit, you know, your own agenda, why not, right? Take advantage of it. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you being with us. When we come back, a quick break. Thank you, Jesse Lessinger. 15 Now, and check it out, 15now.org. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Coming up, your calls at 866-987-TOM. That's T-H-O-M. We're going to be talking about raising the minimum wage. Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. Thank you for watching me on Free Speech TV today. I think you have the number on your screen, so let's get to the calls. And we started out with Donna, who is watching in Columbia, California. Hi, Donna. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon, Leslie. I'll just say something very briefly, and then I'll just hang up and listen to your reply, okay? You've said you would vote for Hillary Clinton because you want to see a woman in the White House.
That's not the only reason I would vote for her, but that is one of the reasons,
that's
yes.
That's one of them, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but shouldn't the content of her character and her corporatist DLC politics be the driving factor, not her gender? And as progressive.
Well, I didn't say the gender was the driving factor. I said it was one of the elements. For example,
okay.
Some people just vote on one issue. But I don't vote on one issue, but I do vote for the person on the whole. And I mean, you may have a problem with her character. I don't. And quite frankly, I really don't feel the character. If we're going to look at character, then we get into, well, how many of them, you know, did drugs or drank when they were younger? If we're going to get into character, how many of them screwed around? If we're going to get into character, then many of these presidents shouldn't have been president, right?
May I say something, please?
Sure.
But as progressives and voting for another corporatist, isn't this the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over with an expectation of different outcomes. And it's certainly, I don't base this on petty things like smoking pot, drinking, or womanizing. She has a very corporatist DLC agenda. And anyone who can look themselves in the mirror and say, I'm a progressive and vote for her, needs to really double check their progressive.
Well, you can judge me all you want, and I don't live by a stereotype. I'm a human being. I'm an American. I vote for who I want to. But I can tell you this. If I go to the racetrack, and whether it's a dog or a horse running, even though I'm not a betting person using that as an analogy, I'm not going to put my money on someone who's going to lose. And I've done that. I voted for Ralph Nader in the past. I voted for independent candidates, John Anderson, back in the day. And these were people I believed in and people who were not going to win. I want to vote for someone who's going to win. Unfortunately, we currently have a two-party system. Unfortunately, we still have an electoral college. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Until that system changes, I have a choice. Vote for the candidate I want most or vote for the candidate out of the two that it comes down to that can win.
Progressives have been destroying themselves. This is what we have been settling for. People who are not progressive in any way, shape, or form. I believe it was Obama.
Well, I don't believe Hillary Rodham Clinton is not progressive in any way, shape, or form, especially when it comes to women's
Congress,
rights.
Blinking idiots or retards. This is called slapping the hippie in their DLC circles. And if you're tired of being slapped around, I guess you need to go someplace else and vote. But thank you anyway, Leslie. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. And you know what? Actually, this is a problem. Honestly, this is a problem progressives have. This is a problem conservatives have. And this is a problem women have, is rather than accept people as they are, we love to generalize, we love to label, we love to judge, and we want everybody to do things our way, right? So for the people out there who are like, I'm an independent, I won't call myself a Democrat or a Republican. I'm a liberal, I won't call myself a progressive. They're the same darn thing. This is a problem, America. It really is a problem. This is one of the reasons we never had a woman president. Women love to keep each other down. You know, if you vote, vote. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I think And you know what? I'm not going to be able to influence you to vote. I wouldn't want that much power. But, you know, I don't like corporatism any more than you do. But I am a realist. And if you think that somebody without billions of dollars with the new Supreme Court decisions is going to win, that isn't going to happen. Hey there, how you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. Let's get back to the calls. And we started out with Nathan, listening on KTNF in Minneapolis. Hi, Nathan. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, good. So I'm calling from Minneapolis, the land of 10,000 liberals. We got...
I live in California. I thought that was my state.
Pretty close. And we also are experiencing global warming here as it snowed yesterday, May 1st. So
did it really snow yesterday in Minneapolis?
Oh,
wow.
And it was snowing yesterday, the day before, and we had snow in May last year, too. So we're on the cold side of that global warming, but kind of besides the point. I liked your previous caller. I liked what she said about the whole Hillary Clinton issue. I'm on the complete opposite because I consider myself a Rand Paul Republican, and that's, I see what the Republican establishment has become. It's, you know, they're talking about nominating Jeb Bush out of all people, and it's just like, that's like the definition of insanity because George Bush wasn't a true Republican to the sense of what we stand for.
Well, I'm very sorry, but correct me if I'm wrong. The last caller said, and I do agree with her, about corporatists. And if you agree with what she said, how can you be supporting Rand Paul? Aren't the Koch brothers giving him a lot of cash?
Well, I know the Koch brothers also donate, you know, millions and millions and millions to charities, and that's their own private, you know.
I'm not talking about charities. We're not voting for the Salvation Army or Goodwill to be our president.
Well, Barack Obama took, I think it was like $10 million from Wall Street.
No question. What did I just say, Nathan?
Yeah, no,
I said they all have corporations backing them, those that have won. Absolutely,
sure.
No question.
Sure. Yeah, money's in politics. It's been that way.
And it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse because of the Supreme Court ruling. And until we have a third party or change our electoral process, that's not going to change. And the American people, for the most part, I love my country, my fellow man and woman here. We love to open our mouths, but words have to be followed by action or nothing's going to happen.
No, and I agree with you because I do feel like that is a problem. I'll be the first to admit that, you know, corporations on both sides are going to buy out candidates and they're going to dictate kind of what they're, you know, the Koch brothers will go down one path, the environmentalists will go down another path, and they'll be influenced, you know, for elections. And with the minimum wage thing, I grew up in a small business. My dad owns a construction company in Minnesota here. And when I was, you know, younger working for him, we kind of complained. I'm like, Dad, why aren't you paying me more? You know, come on. He's like, because I wouldn't be able to stay in business. You know, why not pay me 50 bucks an hour? And if I'm working 2,000 hours a year, that's $100,000. I'm out of poverty, but it's just not as simple as, I think raising the minimum wage eventually will just hurt the smaller businesses more than big corporations.
Well, actually, I would disagree with you. And the reason I disagree with you, like I said, I'm not an economist, so I look to economists for what they say. The overwhelming majority of minimum wage jobs are by huge corporations. They're not even by the 50. You know what I mean? Hundreds.
And these huge corporations
can absorb the cost. We also have to look at the realities of how that would trickle down. More than 700,000 Americans who are currently in poverty would be lifted out of that status. That helps that individual. It also helps our nation on the whole. The GDP would rise by as much as 15.2 million dollars. There would be new job creation, 132,000 to start, and that's with a $10.10 minimum wage per hour. The wage increase would actually cost retailers 1% of total sales. You're talking about generating as much as $5 billion in additional retail revenue. And what does that do? That creates more jobs. And the average shopper would pay just 15 cents per more shopping trip than most. If you ask somebody who's out of work, would you rather pay 15 cents more when you go shopping and have a job or stay where you're at? I think they would pick the former.
Well, and then the argument with the, you know, like the whole energy and the environmentalist, I'm looking at North Dakota right now. It's a neighbor state. I've seen a lot of friends of mine. We graduated in the Twin Cities here in Minnesota. They were struggling. They couldn't find, they didn't want to go to college or whatever, and that's fine.
Uh-huh.
They picked up and moved their entire families to North Dakota. After 6 years, they're all making six figures plus.
Well, that, you know what? That, I mean, sorry, that's just, I'm a broadcaster. I've moved all around for opportunity. I think sometimes that's just common sense. That doesn't necessarily even matter as to who is president and what political party they are. If you look historically at the United States and our economy since George Washington and the housing market, we tend to be cyclical. It's like every 7 years, not exactly seven, but just look, it's a roller coaster ride. It goes up, it goes up, comes down. And now I'm not saying we just sit back and do nothing about it. Obviously, you can push quicker and make 7 years six when you're on a down due to legislation. But if you're in a heavily concentrated area, example, my husband did his residency in San Francisco, beautiful city, loves it there, one of his favorite cities, wanted a job. Highest number of doctors per capita, no jobs. Couldn't move there. Oh, we couldn't move there, but that would have been stupid. That would have been foolish, right? He wouldn't have found employment in his field. There definitely, if you're high tech and you have the education, Silicon Valley's the place to you. And by the way, there are hundreds of jobs available there right now. So see, Nathan, we don't disagree as much as you think. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Waukegan, Illinois, where Mike is listening on WCPT. Hi, Mike. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, you know, about how there's a disparity in the way people who violate the law, like the Bundy and his bunch out there in Nevada, and the Occupy movement. I guess you contrasted those two, did you?
Well, I just, you know, actually it was a caller who brought it up, and I think it's a very good point. You know, why, when somebody is pointing a gun at a federal official, why when somebody's breaking the law, not paying taxes based on agreement, why when militia are breaking the law and violating the constitutional rights, the civil liberties and the privacy of American citizens who are trying to enter the state of Nevada and specifically the county where Clive and Bundy lives, why are those people not arrested, yet individuals who are protesting and exercising their First Amendment right, as we saw in the past 24 hours with May Day, why are they being pepper sprayed and dragged off in cuffs?
Exactly, you know. In fact,
Hang on, Mike. Quick break. Don't go away, okay? Hang on. Back after this. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Don't go away.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Hi, Leslie Marshall here. If you like me filling in for Tom, check out my show, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. And we're back. I'm back. Leslie Marshall here, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. We're going to take your calls. We're talking about a lot of things, minimum wage, running for president, corporatists backing those individuals running for president. You know, I'm not a real progressive because I like Hillary. That was the latest insult of the day. That's nothing compared to the nasty comments I get from people when I'm on Fox News Channel every week. Let's get to the calls. Mike, I was talking to, listening on WCPT in Waukegan, Illinois. Mike, thanks for holding. Welcome back. Go ahead.
Yeah, Leslie. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me the way you have this disparity in treatment of these two groups.
Why doesn't it surprise you?
Well, I mean, it seems to me like rednecks can really get away with murder, and I don't mean that as a figure of speech or hyperbole, you know. I look back to, I think it was back in the early 70s, early 80s, right around that time when Jimmy Carter left office and Ronald Reagan came in, there was a depression, a recession or whatever, and the auto industry was hit pretty bad. And I don't know if you remember the Vincent Chin incident. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, actually.
Okay. A guy by the name of Vincent Chin drove into a fast food restaurant in a parking lot, and this is around the Detroit area, and he was Asian, and he was driving a foreign car, and there were
now it's sounding familiar. Go ahead.
There were two drunken unemployed auto workers out of work. They were unemployed, and they became enraged because of his race and the car he was driving, and they bludgeoned him to death, and they got off scot-free for it. And this was covered on an episode of the Phil Donahue Show, which I was able to observe. There was another incident, too, around Detroit area where this these hippies were living at this guy's house, and I guess they were, like, doing his daughter, you know, and he became enraged one night and came down and shot him to death. And I guess because they were hippies and he was a good old boy redneck like the those other two guys, he got off as well. I mean, I know.
Well, we have several incidents right now that are happening like that. There was a man that shot two young guys that were in his home. I mean, there's that whole, you know, king of your castle, the domain, you know, that you have when somebody enters your home, that you have the right to kill them. There's also an incident where a man walked into his daughter's bedroom, and his daughter is 16, claims not to know a guy in her bedroom like at 1 o'clock in the morning, and the father shoots him. And after, a daughter admits that, yeah, it was her boyfriend. What do you think he's doing in her bedroom at 1 o'clock in the morning? I mean, she wasn't screaming. She wasn't, you know, naked. He wasn't trying to attack or rape her. This is a huge problem. You know, to me, it comes down to a huge problem with stand your ground, whether you're standing outside or inside. And that problem comes down to that weapon and us being too trigger happy in the United States. Is a whole different issue. That we could talk about for hours and hours and hours, which is, you know, we have too many guns out there. We don't have background checks. We don't have mental illness being addressed. We have the types of weaponry that certainly should not be the hands of anyone except for military and law enforcement. We have our Constitution, our Second Amendment constitutional right, being stretched way beyond the intention of the original writers, and I would imagine the founding forefathers are rolling in their grave. The list goes on. We have a culture of violence. We haven't addressed that. Our children have become more and more violent, and why do they resort to violence to sort out their problems? Not everyone with a gun who is blowing people away in a massacre is mentally ill. Mental illness, another huge issue. Multifaceted problem needs a multifaceted solution, and we don't even have one piece of that solution being put forth in legislation. Despite the will of the American people, universal background checks, a good first step, and that's not even being done. Mike, thank you for calling, and good talking with you this afternoon. Let's go to Dan, watching on Free Speech TV in Morristown, New Jersey. Hi, Dan. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
All right, so where do I start? So let's talk about the minimum wage piece, and before I hang up, just remind me, I'll give you a couple of quick thoughts on Clive and Bundy, because I know that kind of popped up earlier. So, minimum wage. I'm an economic geek, as you probably know, so let me go through some of the basic economics and why it's not a Republican thing of denying it. It's more of an economics factor. First of all, we're talking about a minimum wage increase from $7.25 to $10. So we'll give or take a few cents either way. About 30%. 72% of the American workers currently, forget about minimum wage or whatnot for a second, work for small businesses. By definition, 100 employees or less, 72%. Now, the difference between minimum wage workers working for small businesses versus non-minimum wage workers only differs by a few percent. So the vast majority of workers in the U.S., because most people, you know, when you think about companies and working, you think of a huge corporation that hire 80, 90, 100,000 people. They have those folks working on the books. But if you really think about it, the vast majority of workers in this country work for small businesses. Always has been the case. Always will be. So, let's not talk about the McDonald's or the Burger Kings for a second, although one of your callers made mention of the fact that they're making record profits, which, if you're a stock market guy, couldn't be further from the truth. Their last quarter was extremely down. They missed earnings, both McDonald's and Burger King missed earnings by dramatic amounts, to the point where they are closing stores at a greater level than ever before. And I mean, right now they're blaming it on the weather of the first quarter, which very well could be the case. So anyways, to get back to my point, 72%, let's say 70% of minimum wage workers work for small businesses. Most small business owners do not work on a profit margin of 30% or greater. They just simply don't. Now we're talking about increasing their payroll by 30%. Maybe less, because maybe a few of the workers are minimum wage and some are higher paid, but do they have to give those folks a raise and to kind of keep pace with the minimum wage worker? Not real sure, but they don't operate on a 30% profit margin. So what's going to happen is one of three things. Number one, they're going to have to raise their prices to a point of where it becomes almost the big conglomerates put them out of business. You know, the Home Depot has put the little hardware stores out of business. Or they've got to obviously reduce their workforce by 30% or a combination thereof. I got to believe that, unfortunately, what's going to happen is they just can't turn the spigot on and say, well, we're just going to sell more. I mean, that would be nice if you could do that, but you just can't. So what's going to happen is folks are going to get laid off. These are the people that are unskilled labor for the most part, are working at a job because they really, really need the money. These are the people that shouldn't be laid off. Not that anybody should, but they really shouldn't be. The unintended consequences are going to be vast.
Well, first of all, let's look at a couple of things. One, you know, you talked about small businesses, and let me give you some numbers. 28 million small businesses currently in operation in the United States. 22 million of those are non-employer businesses. So you're talking about 6 million of the small businesses. Employer-based businesses actually make up more than 75% of all businesses currently operating in the United States, and those are stats as of today. The growth of small business will continue to progress this year. It will continue to progress in the future because more people are becoming entrepreneurs and small business owners. As a matter of fact, small businesses, you probably know, have generated more than 65% of the new jobs created in the United States, and that's since 1996. My question to you with regard to your citing your stats first is, the last time the minimum wage was increased, what happened to those small businesses? How come we have more small businesses and not less? The small businesses obviously didn't go under, as you're suggesting that, you know, they couldn't, you know, afford the profit the lack of profit margin or the cost margin.
The problem is the last time all prior times minimum wage was increased was nowhere near 30%. Nowhere near it. Now, you know, we haven't seen inflation numbers have been extremely low for the past several years. And you're right, we haven't increased that minimum wage throughout the years to kind of keep pace with inflation. But now to just say, all right, we're going to make up for this all at once, is going to be a tremendous burden.
I hear you, but the problem is, whether we look at San Jose, California, which increased a year ago their minimum wage to $10 an hour, people said it was going to cost $600,000, force businesses to slash working hours, force 30% of employers and 43% of those in charge of hiring minimum wage workers to lay off, prevent new businesses from opening. The list goes on. Do you want to know what happened? None of that. Absolutely none. Quite the opposite. So there's what we think will happen and then what we have seen happen. I'm Leslie Marshall. Thanks for your call, Dan. I'm sitting in for Tom Hartman here on The Tom Hartman Show. Don't go away.
You're listening to The Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall. If you like what you hear here, check me out. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. I broadcast live Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Hi, Leslie Marshall here. Thank you for watching on Free Speech TV. Let's take your calls. I'm sitting here for Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Let's go to Paul in Brighton, Michigan. Paul, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon and welcome. And thank you for watching on Free Speech TV.
Yeah, hi, Leslie. You're doing a fine job filling in for Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm an economist, and I want to add a few facts. The thing that that last guy is missing, completely missing on, which is what all the Republicans miss, is that when you raise the minimum wage, it applies to everybody in the country, which means people working at McDonald's now have more money. People working at Target now have more money. So the people working at McDonald's buy more from Target. The people working at Target buy more from McDonald's. So there is no hit to a business. There's an initial hit when they, you know, pay their employees, but then they more than make up for that by increased business sales.
And that's what I was pointing out, Paul. I agree with you. That's what I was pointing out, because all the information and the research that I did show that the majority of minimum wage jobs are actually in these corporations like the McDonald's and the Target. Those corporations are so huge, they're very it's easy to absorb that cost.
Yeah. But they don't. But there is really no cost absorption because their increase in sales, because
the increased productivity is going to override that in not only the long term, but, you know, the very short long term, as opposed to the initial hit that they pay in additional salaries.
Yeah. Well, Republicans have been doing that for 50 years. They've been saying it's going to kill jobs. Oh, it's all these scare tactics. And they've been wrong, wrong every time.
Do you know that was the same argument they started with in 1938? They had the same argument again in the 60s. You know, last time I checked, we're still standing. And a lot of Americans are doing well. A lot of Americans who were working for somebody are working for themselves. And some of these small businesses, by the way, when we talk about stats, one thing I didn't mention to Dan and Paul, I'm sure you can speak to this or another, part of this issue is, you know, I have a business. I'm sitting right here at my desk, and I, Leslie Marshall, have the Leslie Marshall LLC business, let's just say, and no employees. We have a lot of people, especially with telecommunication, that just sit with a computer, with their laptop, their iPad, and they have a business. They have an LLC, and they're a small business owner, but it's just them, no employees.
Yeah. And here's some more proof. The minimum wage was raised during the Clinton administration, most because of the Democrats, of course, and 23 million jobs were created after that. We had the largest economic expansion during peacetime in history.
No, like you said, if you're making more, you know, if you're out of work, you're not going to go to McDonald's, maybe, or maybe that's, you know, you're going to go to the 99-cent menu. Yes, I know about that. And, or maybe the dollar section at Target, and, you know, you need some stuff there, or you have to go there because you won't, like me, shop at Walmart. But reality, if you have more people working, they're making money, they're spending more, that's more product to make, and that's more jobs needed for those people to make that and sell that. It's a win-win.
Right, right.
All right, any other last point? We have less than 60 seconds to break.
The CBO, actually, the CBO kind of leads towards the right, but even they said raising the minimum wage would add $34 billion to the economy.
They also said that almost 17 million people would have their wages increased who aren't making minimum wage, and they also talked about job growth as well. So I agree with you, Paul. Right-leaning CBO is helping our side here on the left and defending what we're saying. I'm Leslie Marshall. Thank you for your call. I'm sitting in for Tom here on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't go away. Quick break. We'll be right back to you. Hey there, how you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Now, I am a talk show host, and I am on Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, and talk radio news services on my show as well. And today I was emailing with Bob Ney, and I said to Bob, hey, Bob, we're running tape tonight. I'm off, and he's like, I know. And of course he knows, because he knew and I didn't know he was going to talk to me now. Hi, Bob, always a pleasure to talk to you, buddy. Why he does, I'm Washington correspondent for talk radio news service for our nation's capital. How you doing? Happy Friday.
Thank you. Actually, I wasn't that smart. I didn't realize.
We get to have our date tonight anyway, right? So tell me what's going on, because obviously, because I didn't think I'd be on with you, I didn't read your emails.
Sure. Well, I sent some different stories, but I have to tell you, there's only really one story today, and that is the Benghazi. This has morphed, Leslie, into something seriously quite unbelievable from this morning. You had, we know the White House, the give and take with the press secretary yesterday with the media. And then, of course, this morning, Congressman Issa from California was going to subpoena the Secretary of State He had the speaker saying to the Secretary of State, you need to come over and tell us why these emails weren't given before. That's where it stood this morning. And then all of a sudden, right out of the blue, Speaker Boehner has appointed a select committee. Now, this takes it to an entirely different level. You know, I had been involved in funding select committees, and they're not going to have Congressman Issa to run it. They're going to have a former prosecutor who, this is who I think they're going to have, who is a member of the Oversight Committee, Representative Trey Gowdy, a Republican of South Carolina, who's going to chair that committee. Now, the Democratic side, Leslie, has to decide, do they want to participate in this and appoint members or not? And that's a very tricky decision.
Why? Explain that.
Well, you know, sometimes they'll say this is, you know, either side will say this is a farce, it's a joke, we're not going to participate in it. However, if that happens, it's kind of a gamble because then the Republicans are sitting there by themselves, and one could say, well, it's all partisan, but they would say, well, the Democratic side refused to participate, and we're going to, quote, get to the truth. So probably if they're going to do this, it's better to participate than not.
I would agree because you want to be there to be able to say, no, that's not what happened. Please continue, Bob.
Well, I have to stress again, this is going to dominate the news for, I don't know, a month, two, three.
But that's what Republicans want, because repeal, replace is a mantra they can't speak with the numbers and the change of opinion, even by Republicans and certainly by elderly in the United States with regard to the Affordable Care Act, correct?
Well, yes, and that was the one domination theme they had. Now, I think they're going to try to do two things here. One, obviously, they're going to try to put the administration in a huge box about, you know, are there additional emails? Why didn't this email come out? Two, you know for a fact what they're going to try to do, which is Hillary Clinton. They are going to, you know, a lot of people view this as the way to stop Hillary. If they don't have a candidate, this is the way to stop Hillary in 2016.
In your professional opinion, as a former congressman, Bob, do you think this is the way to stop Hillary?
Oh, no, absolutely not. In fact, this will come into a great big debate. You know, did the president know? What did the president know? You know, the emails, why weren't they sent? It wasn't Hillary Clinton's responsibility to send these. So we already know just about everything there is to know about Benghazi. Now, I will say the White House press secretary said, well, go ask the State Department. He probably should have just, you know, answered this, but he referred to the State Department. But I don't think that this will not be the silver bullet to get Hillary Clinton. And the Republicans are going to have to be very careful with this, because this select committee, I can't stress to you how this elevates this entire ball of wax to a completely different level. They're going to be
why does it elevate it to a different level? Because it's a prosecutor. I mean, and I say that because there have been five committees, including a bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee in January 2014. All five committees found that the military was partially to blame. All five committees found that we dropped the ball. I mean that, you know, that we didn't have the security that we should have had.
Right.
All five committees found that Ambassador Stevens refused some of the security. All five committees found that there was no cover-up, there was no conspiracy, there was no blame within the White House, including the president, and no trail that led to such. What would a sixth committee find from this memo? This is part of a 20-paragraph memo. There are some lines about Benghazi, but there are also lines about the American image. And to me, whether you're in the United States and whether a president's a Democrat or Republican and whether it's Benghazi or 9/11, isn't it the job description of everybody who works for the president of the United States to make sure that he, until we have a she, comes out smelling like a rose?
Well, they're going to take this a whole different way. They're not all the facts you mentioned, which are good and you know, the reality of this, they're going to take it a different direction. They're going to take it a cover-up.
Even though five committees, including a bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee, have said no cover-up, they're going to try.
Taking the brand new, you know, never previous quote released emails, which the White House had said, spokespeople had said, look, the same information was in other emails. Nancy Pelosi today, the minority leader, said that. But the Select Committee will hire investigators. It will hire. It'll have money. And it will focus, and again, you'll notice they're taking Congressman Issa out of this mix.
Why?
Well, because look what he did. You know, he ended up getting so many headlines on you know, not allowing the minority ranking minority member to even speak in committees. So, you know, he didn't handle it correctly, quote, according to a lot of people. So now
Bob, sorry to interrupt, but I just have a minute. I want to get as much in with you. Is this to try and impeach Obama?
Well, that's a very interesting point. People ask me today on radio, you know, does this lead to the level of impeachment? Well, I mean, I don't think it does, and I think most, you know, constitutional lawyers, and I'm not, but would say it doesn't. But I believe that at the end of the day, they're going to try to raise us to the level of the White House knew, they covered up, they lied. You know, somebody is going to throw out the I word at some point in time. And I'm not saying they'll make a motion to do it, but it will leave this unclear before the election.
Thank you, Bob. Bob Ney, White House and Washington correspondent, Talk Radio News Service. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. Happy Friday, TGIF. And this is Hour 3 of the Tom Hartman Program. I am sitting in for him, obviously, and I'm glad you're listening or watching on Free Speech TV. We have a lot of people calling about a lot of different issues. It's a Friday, a little bit of a free-for-all, so feel free. Too much free in there, huh? 866-987-TOM, that's T-H-O-M is the number. We've been talking about minimum wage. We've been talking about whether that's going to be a benefit or a detriment to businesses, both large and small, to our economy. And I think at least from most of us who are on my side of the aisle, the left, progressive, liberal, democratic side, that it would be a benefit. And most of the economists agree, even the CBO, which tends to be a bit right-leaning. We've also talked about Clive and Bundy and the militia, and how come nobody is being arrested there, yet we see people in the past 24 hours arrested in Seattle with protests. We don't see Tea Party people arrested. We see Occupy Wall Street people arrested. What's going on here? And we have a lot of other things to chat about. So let's get to it. How does that sound? No guest in this hour, just you and me and your calls. We were talking actually at the end of last hour, and I put him on hold, so just to be kind, I'll bring him back my pad if he's still with us. Paul in Brighton, Michigan, who is an economist and who agreed with me and says that the arguments which we agreed that were made with minimum wage and with regard to increasing minimum wage in 1938, the first minimum wage increase and proposal to do such, the establishment of minimum wage, and in the 60s again and every time thereafter, these are the same excuses. It's going to hurt small business. It's going to destroy jobs. And that's not the case. Paul and I talked about at the end of last hour. Paul, welcome back. Thank you for holding. If you're there, you there?
Yeah, thanks, Leslie.
Okay. I wanted you to be able to finish up because you are the economist. I am not. I am the talk show host. But we both agree, and so do economists and nonpartisan, and even those like the CBO that lean right, this will create jobs. This will increase the – when you increase the base, the minimum wage, then the middle and the higher income levels go up. So the rich get richer. You would think the CEOs would love this. They love to make more and more money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best kept secret. Raising the minimum wage is actually good for, millionaires, multimillionaires that own
you know, fairly large businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of them are too short-sighted to see that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And one other thing I want to say is if the minimum wage was still $2 an hour, what do you think most people would be making right now? They'd be making $4 or $5 an hour. The point is that just about everybody's wage is based on the minimum wage. You know, the
except for one, Paul, and I really feel when I was a waitress, I made $2.13 an hour and relied on tips. In 2014, we're still doing that. Doesn't that have to be addressed for those in the service industry that rely on tips?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a form of slave labor, practically.
Yeah.
You know,
all right. Yeah, very good point, Paul. Thank you, and thank you for hanging with us through the break there. I appreciate that. Listen, there's a reality to that. You know, when you increase the bottom, when you raise the bar, it's going to increase accordingly all the way up the ladder. And that's a benefit, according to the CBO, for over 16 million Americans, and that's just with an increase to $10.10 an hour. All right, let's continue here, and we go to David watching on Free Speech TV in Victorville, California. Hi, David.
Hi. You know, I was thinking as I'm listening to this conversation, Tom had mentioned something about the Wizard of Oz, I think it's either the beginning of this week or last week. And I truly believe that we are living in the land of Oz. And what I think he meant by it and what I mean by it today, we're having a strange conversation about the power of the wizard that controls our country, controls our media, controls our economics, and even the food and the fuel that we use to sustain ourselves. Now, we're talking about the minimum wage and the negative effects of that, as opposed to looking at the reality of what is actually occurring here with the maximum wage, as it has began to now oppress. Well, I heard a number, 80 people did this. Now, I'm not an economist, but 80 people control more wealth than 3 billion people on the planet Earth, 80 people. And here in the United States, and I understand you're here in California, you know, we have these gas prices here.
Yes.
Right? I'm a used to be small business owner, too, but I mean, it's like, they give us in the land of Oz these strange ways of looking at things. The gas prices, every year we are told that it has to rise because we're moving from winter fuel to summer fuel. And our gas prices just go off the hook, right? Which has an immediate effect upon everybody, and especially those with these suppressed wages. And so as we have these discussions about minimum wage, we have to realize we are doing the context of a real bizarre and an insane world that is being controlled by the wizard. And that is, as the lady was mentioning to you about Hillary being a corporatist, these corporations are really the ones that are pulling these levers. So we don't have a discussion about maximum wage and the effects to which it absolutely have upon us. And so while we're so concentrated on the minimum wage, the maximum wage has completely co-opted and corrupted our reality.
I agree with you 100%, and you are almost exactly right with numbers and a good memory. Business Week, Bloomberg, Oxfam, their richest 1% are worth as much as $3.5 billion. The poorest, so basically what it comes down to is the world's 85 richest people are worth as much as $3.5 billion of the poorest. You take 3.5 billion people who are poor and on one side, and on the other side you have 85 of the richest, and that is in the world. Those numbers are astonishing. Just absolute. I mean, there's income inequality. There's huge disparity in wages. Thank you for your call, and thank you for your passion, David. I appreciate it. Let's continue, and we go next to, let's go to Diane in San Jose, California, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Diane. How are you? Good afternoon. Diane? Okay. She probably stepped away to get a snack or something. Diane, when you come back, turn down your radio. We will come back to you once again. Let's go to Doug, listening on TuneIn in St. Charles, Missouri. Hi, how you doing?
I am doing great. I really appreciate you sitting in for Tom. I've never heard you before, and I'm very impressed.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I've been having a couple of thoughts that have been running around my head. First off, when the caller a couple ago that was kind of on that libertarian bent of how it's going to destroy everything if we give people a raise. Since they've destroyed the unions and they've taken away people's bargaining power, I kind of look at it as government is going to be the last resort towards equality. And I think that that's going to be a driving force in the political world for the next 20 years. I think this is coming on. It's just starting now as the Democrats talk about raising the wages. And the other part of it is when people talk about small businesses, I remember Keith Olbermann did a section on this on his news program when it was on MSNBC, and he was talking about pass-throughs and how the Koch brothers industries qualify as a small business because it's privately owned. And I'm sure you could probably enlighten me on this, but that's how they get the tax breaks and they are able to skirt several laws on benefits and things like this. I look at it like they don't want to pay anybody anymore because I think what they're
Hang on. We got to take a break. I'm sorry. I thought you'd finish your thought before the break. I can't always calculate that properly. My bad. We'll be back right after this. Leslie Marshall in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't go away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Coming back, I'm Leslie Marshall. You want to listen to me, check out my show Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, LeslieMarshallShow.com. Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Thank you for listening, and thank you for watching on Free Speech TV. Let's take some of the calls now, and we go to Belfair, Washington with Ed. Ed, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Leslie. I'll double down. You're doing a great job for Tom.
Thank you.
I was at the town hall last night, and Hillary was brought up last night, and it was kind of a heated argument about she being a corporatist, and I tend to agree with Tom on it. It's we the people that make that president, and I still have hope for President Obama. I don't know if he's going to come around or not, but, you know, this morning with him and Chancellor, they were on TV, and he brought up the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Every time he brings that up, I have to call the switchboard, get a hold of Reed, leave a message. We don't want that. I'm glad he put it on hold now. But the minimum wage has to go up. And when that came down from the town hall, I wasn't near the protest or the standoff. We could see it from a distance. And I believe in peaceful protests. You know, they don't have to break glass or start fires. We need somebody like Martin Luther King to come back. You know, somebody that can bring back peaceful resolutions.
Well, I wasn't there, and you were, and are, obviously. Did you think this was peaceful? Because everything I had seen was until late in the night. It appeared to be peaceful. So was it peaceful, or does it become a non-peaceful protest when people are being pepper sprayed and dragged away in handcuffs?
Well, I think at the beginning of it, it was probably very peaceful and everything, but there was probably some people that got in there that were anarchists that, you know, they weren't getting their point across by just doing a peaceful demonstration, so they have to start fires and overturn things, throw stuff, and that's what destroys it for everybody. You know, you got the few that destroy it for the many, and that's the problem. If everybody was very peaceful at all times, you know, they would have got their point across better. Because what they put on the TV, obviously, they don't start it out with the peaceful part of the demonstration. They always go to what happens at the end.
Absolutely. If it bleeds, it leads, right? Thank you, and thank you for the compliment. Thank you for calling. Very kind of you. Let's go next to Johnny O, watching on Free Speech TV in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Hi, Ms. Marshall.
Oh, please call me
Leslie. I have a cousin named Tanya Marshall. And she lives in Toronto.
Well, I am not really named Marshall. It's my broadcast. It's actually my father's middle name. And it's not my real last name. So I probably am not related to her.
Yeah, well, she's a sculptress up in Toronto. She lives now, and she goes to France and back and forth, and she does metal sculptures and things like that. And she changed her last name to Mars. She dropped the hall.
Oh, interesting.
Anyways, yeah, I was thinking about
very, very quickly because we have to take a break.
Right, about the Hillary thing. Okay, the reason there's things going on that people are skeptical about her. I mean, it'd be great to have a woman in the White House, but the right woman, Elizabeth Warren. Maybe she could be her vice president, because she's got to get her feet off of Wall Street, too. I mean, the Bilderbergs put her where she's at, her husband, and they also put Obama where he's at.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with you there, but two women on a ticket? Come on, we can't get one woman in. Are you serious? We're not going to win with two women on a ticket. That's a reality. You gotta have that white guy somewhere. America just loves those white guys. I know we have a black president. Took a long time. We'll be back. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't go away. I'm Leslie Marshall. I'm sorry. Sometimes I put people on hold and I say I'll come back to them. I'm not coming back to you because I'm forgetting you or ignoring you. Some of those people hang up. They go on. They do have lives. But I enjoy the fact that you're listening and that you're watching on Free Speech TV. And let's get to more calls. We tried to talk to Diane in San Jose, California. She's back. Her phone died, but she's back with us watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Diane, welcome or welcome back, I should say. How are you?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Oh, good. I'm sorry. Okay, it's been a great show. I love it. So many things to talk about. I did mention one time that $10 is not enough, mm-hmm. Of course. You can't pay the rent. I'm going to be quick about this. I was a counselor for a homeless shelter, and I'm trying to get two people in a studio. You can't pay the rent on $10 an hour. Silicon Valley, it cost $1,500 for a one-bedroom. So when I call some of the landlords for people who are sleeping in parks, they don't want to hear about it. You know?
Yes. Yep.
And it's sad. So, I'm right now. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I am going into business, and I pay somebody $15 an hour. He's my personal assistant. And $15 an hour is a lot.
Yes.
But I'm going to open up an art gallery mm-hmm. online, and I'm really excited about that. But as far as helping homeless people find housing is the hardest thing in the world.
Well, definitely. It's very expensive, especially where you are in the San Jose area. My brother-in-law lives there. He actually works for Google, right there in Silicon Valley. Diane, thank you for the call. Very good point. Let's continue, and let's go to Long Island in New York, listening to WBAI, Jerry. Hi, Jerry. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much for taking my call. Before I get to Donald Sterling and his racial comments, first of all, I think all Democrats should get behind Elizabeth Warren for president. I don't know what this movement to have her become vice president is. All liberal Democrats especially should get behind Elizabeth Warren for president instead of Hillary. And also with respect to raising the minimum wage, look, if my father, who before he passed away, before he retired, he was a small businessman. If he can afford to pay the prevailing wage, then all these employers who are complaining and bellyaching, they can afford to pay a very minimum wage to pay a slight hike in it. So I don't buy the arguments against raising the minimum wage. But with respect to Donald Sterling, I want to cover an aspect that nobody else is talking about, because to me, this is an example of why we need affirmative action. I know that's counterintuitive, because Mr. Sterling did hire African-American athletes for his basketball team, despite his stated racial feelings. But suppose, hypothetically, instead of a professional basketball team, suppose Mr. Sterling or someone else with racial prejudice, suppose they owned a hockey team or some other business completely unrelated to sports. And I have serious doubts about the chances of an African-American applicant actually getting hired from someone like them, given their racial feelings. And it's precisely because both racism and sexism and other types of bigotry, because that still exists in our society, and because we still have business owners that have racial prejudice, therefore, I think affirmative action is still needed as a counterbalance to help guard against discrimination in both employment hiring and with respect to college admissions. After all, we don't live in a meritocracy anyway. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, all truth be told, we live in a society full of so many preferences. We have preferences based on cronyism, nepotism, political patronage, and we have the legacy preference. The legacy preference is the most ridiculous preference of all, in my opinion. That's how George W. Bush got into Yale University.
I've argued that as well. I mean, if we're going to give athletes, you know, if there's affirmative action, if you will, for athletes, if there is affirmative action, like you say, in the sense of names, if you're Kennedy, you go to Harvard, if you're a Clinton or a Bush, you go to Yale, then this, to me, this is not fair. And just because we have, one African-American Supreme Court justice, one African-American, biracial, technically half-white, president that has been elected, an African-American attorney general, what does that mean? If we have a female president, we go, oh, they don't need to be paid, a buck for a buck. Keep them at 77 cents on the dollar. I agree with you. And it's also when you look at the position that he was in, with 85% of his players being African-American, him being in the public eye, and also the fact that the NBA had turned their heads to this for a very long time. I think that the punishment fit the crime, and I thought it was great that the justice was swift. Thank you for your call. By the way, David Muir interviewed Elizabeth Warren on ABC, and Elizabeth Warren said she is not running for president in 2016. And she tiptoed around endorsing Hillary, but she verbally, I felt it was kind of a backhanded endorsement. Let me give your exact words. Quote, all of the women, Democratic women, I should say, of the Senate urged Hillary Clinton to run, and I hope she does. And that was actually she was talking with ABC's George Stephanopoulos in that interview. But she did say with ABC's David Muir, she was not running for president of the United States. I like Elizabeth Warren, but I don't think that's what she wants to do right now. Let's see. We have less than 60 seconds. Patrick, can you do it watching on Free Speech TV in Park City, Utah, in less than 60?
Hey, can you hear me, Leslie?
I can hear you.
Hey, I've been, thank God for technology. I had to pick up my son and run an hour errand for an hour, and I've been listening to you. It's been a great show. Real quickly, I'm a big fan of Tom Hartman. I was actually a guest on the program not long ago. I'm a television, producer. I made a film recently called Waking Up the American Dream. And your previous guest, I mean, there were so many incredible calls today. David with the Wizard of Oz
yeah.
analogy just nailed it. But ultimately,
okay, hold on, Patrick. I know you've been holding for an hour, and now I'm going to put you on hold. What a terrible woman I am, but don't go away. I will get back to you. And I know what it's like to multitask with kids in the car. I have a 6- and 7-year-old. We'll be back right after this. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman program. Don't go away. And you can join us. Call 867-987-TOM, T-H-O-M.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall and check out my show Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. Tom Hartman's out today. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for him here, sitting in to host his show, The Tom Hartman Program. And thank you, Tom, for letting me do it. Great audience, and I've been having a great time yesterday and today. Well, we're into the final stretch, going to the weekend, TGIF. Like I said, sometimes calls, get cut off. So if I don't go back to somebody, I'm not being mean or not lying to them. Let's get to our calls, speaking of that. And let's go to Cliff, who is listening on Sirius in San Antonio, Texas. Beautiful city. Hi, Cliff. How are you doing? Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. Not too bad. I wanted to talk about the minimum wage. You've had a lot of callers sort of frame this whole debate as, small businesses are going to get hurt because they're going to have to pay more in minimum wage. But I looked up this piece by George Zornick in The Nation, and what he found was that two-thirds of people who are making minimum wage are work for large corporations defined as 500 people or more.
Well, that's actually, it's funny you say that. George was on my show. George is on my show regularly, and other people from The Nation. Uh-huh. And the Nation, you know, have been supporters of my radio program as well. And George, that's actually where I learned that from in looking up other statistics. You know, he was the springboard, you might say, where the majority of these corporations are the ones who employ the minimum wage employees, and that they can absorb the cost. And like they, you know, a former caller said who was an economist, I think his name was Paul, there's not going to be that much to absorb because their productivity is going to increase and rather quickly.
Yeah, and they're also sitting on loads of cash, and that fact that individuals, but mostly corporations, are sitting on so much cash is what's keeping us in this stagnant economy today. So that's all I had.
All right. Well, thank you, Cliff, and thank you for being so patient and being so calm and just getting your points across. Lovely. In Jennings, Florida, Roger joins us listening on TuneIn. Hi, Roger. Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you doing? Is my cell phone clear?
Cell phone's clear enough for me right now, yeah.
All right. I appreciate it. I just wanted to offer a perspective here. The minimum wage issue, first of all, I support the minimum wage. I believe that, but I look at it from a different interpretation. I look at it as what the workers deserve as contributors to the wealth of our world. In other words, I believe the wealth of our world is being skewed upward unfairly, and the workers genuinely deserve a dignified life because their labor actually creates the wealth of our world. There's nothing that creates the wealth of our world other than the labor of the workers. Therefore, in my opinion, they should be getting the lion's share of the profits that are generated. And so the minimum wage is just the lowest rung of this warfare. I made a suggestion in a speech of mine in a political rally that I held where I suggested that we try to have the Fed organization of banks rather than have them lend to large banks and large money holders at the wonderful interest rates they do lend at directly, if they were to lend to a pool that served the beginning of small businesses under $1 million net assets, if they provided a loan pool to start such businesses at 0% interest or as close to zero as possible so that small businesses can get going and wealth can be spread, not necessarily redistributed, because the small businesses and those who create small businesses, they actually generate the wealth. So I
hear you, and it's a great idea, but I don't think the lenders are going to take the risk, especially because they got burned badly in the past economy. A lot of people, you know, any money that was lent out, whether it was for a mortgage, and we saw the foreclosure rate by banks, or whether it was people that had personal or business loans and didn't pay them back. So I hear you, and I think it's, you know, an admirable, almost not entirely Robin Hood type idea, but I think it's too risky for lenders to do, so I think it's unrealistic that they would do it, although I like the idea. Roger, thank you for joining us. Let's go to Armin online in Bradenton, Florida. Hi, Armin. How you doing? Good afternoon.
I'm doing fine, and I want to say that you are one of the most educated women I ever heard on the media.
Oh, no, I'm not, but thank you. I know people that have PhDs and I in the media, and I don't have one, so but thank you.
Well, I won't, you know, in your case, it might take away some of your oomph and inertia. So maybe that wouldn't be a good thing because you're very pleasant. And when they come at you with the kitchen sink, I heard a few callers who from the I don't really like to call them the right. I think we should reinvent that term. But I call them the fanatical corporate wing because, you know, they're really not right. If you look in the dictionary, what right really means, it's a good thing. And I don't think they're good when they want contemporary feudalism, and that's what the corporate fascist Republicans want. That's their agenda. They want the top 1% to absolutely totalitarianly control everybody's water, their health care, their food, what they'll pay them. I mean, it's the most frightening thing that you could imagine in your life, but that's what the top 1% of the Republican echelon really wants. They're not noble. They don't have another agenda that, you know, to reinvigorate the middle class and the private sector. They've decimated it in the last 30 years. So that's where they're at. They're really, Tom analyzes them, and I agree that they're sociopaths and they're psychopaths. And we've got to figure out somehow legally, lawfully, and peaceably and civilly to rein in their power, because if we don't, somebody might push the wrong button. But that's another story. I'm watching the Ed Show today, 10 minutes ago. He had a guest on, and they're saying that the Senate coming up this week, next week, is going to vote symbolically on the Keystone Pipeline. And they've got like 12 or 14 Democrats bought and paid for to symbolically vote with the Republicans for it. And I think that's a terrible thing. And I don't know if they're setting it up so they can symbolically, but technically, put that up there. And then if it goes forward, then they can create a law that didn't exist prior to this vote that says that they can, through executive order and that vote, enable Obama to basically screw us all on the environment and the pipeline, you know, against the opposition that I think rightfully so has determined that it's an ecological disaster potential, and it won't help the price of fuel in this country. It's all about trickle-nomics, and it won't help the common people and lower the price of gas. There's nothing there for the people here. It's been distorted in its sales pitch and everything for the top 1% that we need to absolutely rein in and hold to account. And if I may, please, I'd like to say one other thing. It's my understanding, and I haven't confirmed this. I heard a rumor. Are you still there?
Yep.
And the rumor is that some news people, I haven't confirmed this or denied it yet. I'm still trying to find out if it's true. Asked Nancy Pelosi today. They said to her that the Republicans are planning on repetitiously keeping Benghazi in the spotlight till the midterms.
Oh, no, that is true. It's not even asking Nancy Pelosi. That is true. John Boehner, and we talked about it with Bob Ney of Talk Radio News Service last hour, and it's been the big news today, that House Majority Leader John Boehner has is putting together an investigative committee. This will be the sixth investigation. The difference is he has taken out Daryl Issa from California, replacing it with a prosecutor. That prosecutor is a Republican. Now, the Democrats can choose to be or to ignore and not be a part of this panel, and I do agree with Bob, who said the Democrats need to be. And what they're hoping to do is to, even though it's been proven by five separate independent investigation committees, including a bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee in January 2014, that there was no cover-up and there was no conspiracy, they're going to try and smear Hillary's name, even though Hillary has nothing to do with and had no authority, even as Secretary of State, as to which memos were released and which weren't, which is really where this stems from. And in addition to that, you know, they're just hoping to start that with the election coming up, because the polls are showing that whether it's Jeb Bush, whether it's Mitt Romney, whether it's Chris Christie, whether it's Paul Ryan, that Hillary Clinton, if the election were held today, would win. And by a very large margin, when we break down the electoral votes that she would receive throughout this country, and how so many states are now purple that were red or blue that were purple, the Republicans are terrified of that. They're also possibly going to use it to try and, if not impeach President Obama, use the I word enough to try and dent and hurt the Democratic Party. So that's absolutely correct. Now, as far as them asking Nancy Pelosi specifically on that, that I would have to see. Because before I went on air, I hadn't seen anything like that. But, it, you know, if it transpired in the past few hours.
There's another part to it, if I may.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I feel beyond honored for you to allow me at least get my voice out there. They also asked her that if they, Republicans, the corporate fascist wing of the Republicans, not the right wing, please, let's don't smear that wonderful word in the dictionary. Right means good. They're not being good. Okay, they said if they repetitiously have these hearings to do political damage to Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, would Nancy Pelosi, with the help of the American people and the media that would get on board, agree to have at the same time hearings on the Bush lies that killed millions of people in Iraq, that cost the Treasury trillions of dollars, and caused untold damage to our boys and girls that went over there and lost limbs, that have mental issues now, that'll be permanently scarred for the rest of their life?
Well, I don't know if that was asked. It's possible that was inquired of by Nancy Pelosi, but I don't think so. Bush is no longer in office. I can't see that happening. Although, why not an investigation into the 88 people who died during Bush's reign in embassies, 11 of which were Americans? I'd be open for that. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't go away.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. Listen to me 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. Hi, this is Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom on the Tom Hartman Program. Let's get to your calls. Thank you for watching on Free Speech TV. You can see the number there on your screen. And we start with Michael in Dublin, Virginia in this segment. Thank you for watching, Michael. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, and this is probably off the wall, but we're always going to have these problems that one person thinks the other should do this, and the other person thinks the other should do that. It's always going to exist. And the reason why I think it would be very difficult to end this thing is because, and this is all I have to realize that it has to do factually with how what's projected onto what's called an electromagnetic field. That's like a screen. When you go to the movies, you see projection images projected onto a screen. Or when you take pictures of somebody, you actually capture the electromagnetic frequencies, and it's on film. The same thing with our thoughts. Our thoughts are generated onto an electromagnetic field, and then other people pick it up, receive those thoughts, and the events from many of the ideas or concepts that we receive, or religion or business or politics, all the wars, the murders, everything that we have is because it's being projected onto this screen.
No, Michael, what I think you're talking about is propaganda, brainwashing, and certainly the media and politicians do a bit of both, right?
Well, absolutely, and that is what is done in the open and for the public to see. If you just open up a book and read,
mm-hmm.
But there's things that there's also frequencies, sounds that are not just vibrations. Electromagnetic frequencies carry information like the internet. So, but this information is subtle.
Absolutely. There are billions of dollars spent with research and marketing groups why do you think you see so many babies and animals in commercials? Because it sells more product. That's proven. So absolutely, to your point. But, you know, polarization, I think, is actually healthy. I think it's one of the things that makes America America, and part of what makes us great. It's when you get wing nuts in that fringe element that are a problem, in my opinion. In Blacksburg, Virginia, watching on Free Speech TV, Seth joins us next. Hi, Seth. Good afternoon.
Hey, Leslie. How are you?
Good.
Can you hear me well?
I can hear you well.
Okay. I have a comment regarding Native Americans, actually.
Okay.
This land is, was, and always will be owned by Native Americans, and Native Americans have an ongoing observation about European culture, which is that it's not sustainable. And we have kind of a myopia about how the military-industrial complex is works within our society. We see that, you know, we get all the goods from the developing world, and we all we see is that, you know, the shiny new bells and whistles of the product as they come into the United States. But we don't see the pollution that has been caused by it. We don't see the human rights abuses that has been caused by it. And we don't see how it's unsustainable in the developing world in the process of production.
You know what, Seth? What you just said it speaks volumes. I've become, and I hope all of you will try to become, a more educated consumer. There are children chained to machines to make clothing and rugs overseas. I've seen some of it with my own eyes. And you're absolutely, absolutely right. This land did and does belong to the Native Americans. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm sitting in for Tom. Don't go away. Hey there. I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. We're going to get to your calls right now, and let's see who's up next here. John watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Good. I have to call you to task on a statement you made. I think you filled in for Tom last week.
Yes, for a couple of weeks ago.
I don't want to make it personal, I'm sorry, regarding your position on the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had some pretty tragic things happen to some people close to me, including my nephew. And a situation with my sister where her boyfriend shot and killed two people that he actually knew, and my nephew who was killed by police. And I'm not quite sure when you say you're a liberal, when you say you're a Democrat, when you say these things, that if that's really, if that really fall, and like I said, I don't want you to, if you don't want to explain why you feel.
No, I can explain. I already know what you're going to ask. I mean, I've been doing this 26 years. You don't think people ask me questions like that? Are you a Democrat?
I consider myself more like a Bernie Sanders.
You're an independent.
Democratic socialist.
Okay. A Democrat, a socialist. Okay. I live in California. And I have Republican friends who are pro-choice. I know Democrats who live right near Bernie and have worked for Bernie. A very good friend of mine I had lunch with a few weeks ago who was down here in Southern California for a conference who has a gun. And he's not even a Democrat. He would be to the left of you. First of all, I think it's terrible for us on the left to act like people on the right, because that's what people on the right do. You know, if you want to pigeonhole me and that makes you feel better and, you know, you want to generalize, I don't feel that in order to be a Democrat, you have to hate guns. You have to hate the death penalty. You have to want to legalize pot. You have to. There are many Democrats on the left. Let me finish, please. There are many Democrats on the left in the African-American and Hispanic community that because of religious reasons do not agree with gay people getting married or gay people adopting children. Now, I don't agree with them. But to question my definition of myself, how I've been pigeonholed, and the position that I have taken for my entire life, 26 years of which have been in the public eye on radio and television and print, that's certainly you're entitled to do that. But I'm a little – it is personal. Yes, I have said I am in favor of the death penalty. The way it is carried out in the United States today is not effective. But if it were carried out properly, yes, I'm in favor of it. And if you don't like that answer, I'm sorry. But that's the reality. There are Democrats that own guns and Republicans that are pro-choice and Democrats like me that are pro-death penalty.
I agree. But why would someone – and you know what? Oddly enough, I'm pro-life, but I only that.
So then, how can you call yourself Bernie like Bernie Sanders?
Because I only hold that stance in my personal life. I don't project it on other people.
I don't project it on other people. I have it in my personal life. How am I projecting it on other people?
Well, when you support the death penalty, you actually are projecting it on other people. Because you're possibly voting for people who agree with it, and I don't know.
Most of the people I don't think I've ever voted for a person that agrees with the death penalty, because I normally have voted for a Democrat or somebody on the left or an independent.
I don't know how the state can say it's okay if I kill you if you kill someone, and say.
I understand. I'm not here to change your mind, and you're not going to change mine. But you asked me a question, and I think I've answered it. I am a liberal. I am a progressive. I am a Democrat. And if you choose not to call me that because I do support the death penalty, although not in the manner in which it's carried out today, that's your prerogative.
I don't think you answered the question.
Well, why didn't I answer the question? You're asking how can I call myself a liberal, which I find ironic, because you say I'm impressing this. No, I'm not impressing this. upon. I live in a state where there is a death penalty.
When you pronounce it on a TV show, you actually are.
No, you're giving me. I'm paid to give my opinion. That's what I do as a talk show host. And you form your own opinions. My opinion should definitely not be your opinion. Develop your own.
Because you said that. One of the reasons I turned you off was because you said that.
Well, that's your choice.
You see how that works?
No, that's your choice.
That is
your choice, John. John, if people, if everybody turned me on, we would all be of one mind, and I find that even more horrific than our conversation right now. Let's go quickly to Kathy, watching on Free Speech TV in Vegas. Hi, Kathy, headed to your city the day after tomorrow. How you doing? And Kathy there? Oh, I didn't hit her. Kathy, hold on. We'll come to
whoops.
Are we out of time in this hour? Go ahead, Kathy, very quick. I don't even have time. I'm sorry. My bad. I didn't hit the switch quick enough. Well, sorry, guys, that we had to end on that note, but, you know, I can't stand labels. I can't stand the fact we have Democrat, liberal, progressive. Aren't we just people who, you know, are hopefully open-minded and make our own choices and are blessed to live in a nation where we have the freedom to do that without being thrown in jail like in Russia or Iran or North Korea, Cuba? That's what I think. I'm Leslie Marshall. Have a wonderful weekend. I've been sitting in here for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. And if you want to question my definition of myself, maybe we should question my gender. Yeah, I'm a woman. Anyway, you can follow
You've
me on Twitter at Leslie
Tom
Marshall.
Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.